All right, it's real now. I wasn't sure until I saw the man's face. David Amber in studio, the NHL on Sportsnet, the NHL season getting underway tonight, 7:30, Pittsburgh Penguins in Tampa for the banner raising against the Tampa Bay Lightning. David Amber in studio. How's it going, man? It is good to see you.
It's good to be here. It's good to see you guys face to face.
It's been a while.
How handsome the two of you are.
Well, there's that certain truth.
My goodness. I am having hair envy at both seats here.
It has been strange though, right? Because you've been on the show and you know I've seen you on TV and but being in the same physical space is not something that has happened a whole lot in the last 2 years.
No, and let's hope, and I don't want to take this down a rabbit hole, but we saw there's been some COVID cases in the NHL starting this season, so we're not through it yet, but I'd like to think, you know, the fans are back. There's going to be a lot of star players returning. I'd like to say we're on the right path, but we're not there just yet.
What's it like? So I know that you have to unveil some new stuff this week in terms of Hockey Night, but like, you guys had to invent a way to do a hockey broadcast, you know, number one, broadcasting games that were in a bubble to start with, and then obviously with a panel that was virtual and people in boxes and not necessarily people in the same space. Are you back? Obviously, we're back in the building. The seats are going to be full, but in terms of the broadcast, are we kind of back to where we were pre-pandemic now, Dave?
It's going to feel a lot more normal to what we saw 2 years ago than what it's been. And first of all, kudos to the NHL and to all the leagues for somehow managing to get their seasons salvaged under the most, you know, dire circumstances. But it wasn't easy, right? Like, it just wasn't natural. You had Kevin Bieksa in a box in Anaheim. Yeah. You had Cassie Campbell-Pascal in a box in Calgary, Kelly Rudy in a box. And, you know, a couple of us sprinkled here in the studio at distance. It just wasn't, you know, I kind of like the buffer from Elliot, but aside from that, you know, it just didn't feel natural. You're having like the way we're sitting here now, we're distanced, but you know, we're looking at each other.
Eye contact, but it's a strange thing, right? It works.
Yeah. There's a connection you can make. And having the fans back, that's going to be a key because it was so, you know, sterile to some degree. The bubble seems so long ago. We were dying for anything. We were stuck in our houses and people would be happy to watch paint dry at that point. It worked. But without the fans, it just isn't the same. I remember the first game we went back in the Stanley Cup Final in Montreal, and there was only, I think, they said there was 2,500 fans. It felt like there was about 8,000 fans there. It was just, you know, you're getting goosebumps because you could see and feel the electricity and the passion of the fans. So to have that back, and you guys mentioned there's going to be a banner raising in Tampa. We kick off at 7:30 Eastern with a banner raising in Tampa. It's going to be 19,000-plus fans there. It's going to be amazing. And the fact that to get back to your question, we're going to be back in studio face-to-face, have that personal connection, be able to, you know, joke around and enjoy the games and have, you know, shared enthusiasm of great moments. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching tonight. I'm looking forward to a full house at Scotiabank Arena tomorrow, which it'll feel like another emotional moment in a couple of months where it feels like there's an emotional moment in a sporting context, like every other week. The Leafs don't go into their post-pandemic schedule really until the fourth game of the season. It's weird. They start against three Canadian teams. They got Montreal tomorrow, and they get Ottawa back-to-back. It feels like we're back in the bubble for the first three games for them.
I know. They haven't played a U.S. team in forever, right? Familiarity, because they played six preseason games, three against Montreal, three against Ottawa, and it's like, here we go again. You know, a little bit of hatred built up. I don't know if you saw the last Toronto-Ottawa game. You know, there was a little thing that happened with Sabourin and Simmons, and I'm not even sure if Sabourin's going to be in the opening night lineup or not. But so maybe there'll be some residual moments there that we could play on. But I'm really, that's another thing, you know, when Steven was asking what's going to be like this year, not just that the logistics of what we're doing will be different. I missed seeing Sidney Crosby versus Connor McDavid. I missed seeing Alex Ovechkin. And you saw them, but you saw them on TV. They were at arm's length. We weren't covering them the way we would cover them if they were playing the Canadiens, the Leafs, Vancouver, et cetera. So I'm really excited for all of that to take place again, to have those matchups against all the other 31 teams.
Yeah, I think so. It's funny when the Canadian, the Scotia North Division, we were all pretty into it at the beginning, right? And it was cool at the beginning. It had its moments. Yes. But by the end, who are they playing? Oh, yeah, one of those. Yeah, one of those other six teams they're playing tonight. And, you know, the kind of the die was cast in terms of the standings, et cetera. And, you know, you were left with, like, amazing that Montreal made it to the finals, but you were left with all these questions about what we had just witnessed. I'm still not quite sure what we saw. Like, were they any good? I'm not sure.
And I think that's true. It's so hard. You know, I'm putting together notes for this season. I always do this like a little binder. The guys make fun of me. I put this binder together.
Yeah. That's an impressive looking binder.
But I kind of had to scrap a lot of it. Like saying, well, you know, Edmonton was fourth in goals for. What's it really matter last year when they were only playing against six other teams, right? Like it's not a true indication of a lot of those statistics you can kind of throw out the window to some degree. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited. I think this will be really interesting. The fact that we get the debut of the Seattle Kraken, you know, God bless them because they've got big shoes to fill. Like Vegas sort of set such an unrealistic idea of what an expansion team can do. And this is what they're going to have to sort of stare down. I'm interested to see what night one looks like for them against their, you know, expansion rivals, I guess you could say, in Vegas. So there's a lot of great storylines.
Yeah, let's start with the team that we're going to see, well, against the Penguins. And we mentioned no Crosby, no Malkin for this one. Malkin's going to be out for a while. Maybe Crosby returns somewhat soon. But this Lightning team, it's a different-looking Lightning team. They don't have that identity third line that was so crucial to their success over the last couple of years. But they still have the top six. It's pretty damn good. And that Kucherov guy, he's okay. He's not bad.
And he's going to play this year too, right?
Yeah. Yes,
apparently
he's not
so. Yes.
Sit at home waiting until the playoffs. Yeah, here's the thing. They went out, they got Corey Perry, which is a pretty shrewd move. Can you get lightning in a bottle twice? I mean, think about the impact he had on the Montreal Canadiens.
Yes.
In fact, he's been to the Stanley Cup final the last 2 years, and he's lost both times to Tampa, so it's one of those, if you can't beat him, join him. He got a two-year deal. This is how you reinvent that third line. You get guys who are hungry. So you have Corey Perry, who's, you know, hungry, still wants to make a name for himself, still, you know, just like we see Jason Spezza in this market, you know, always trying to say, I'm still there, I still have legs, I can still play. And he's done it the last few years for Toronto in a very impressive fashion. Corey Perry's like that guy for Tampa. And you have Matthew Joseph. They have a number of young guys who can maybe step in. But replacing that Gord Gaudreau line is going to be incredibly tough. But, you know, I've heard analysts say if you go through their team, they have the best defenseman, Victor Hedman. They have the best goalie, Vasilevsky. Mm-hmm. They probably have one of the top two or three forwards in Kucherov.
It's a good starting point.
You got Braden Point. You have Stamkos. I mean, the nucleus is there. They've, you know, Brisbois, their GM's done an incredible job. He didn't have to dissect the whole thing and tear it apart, right? They do have a legitimate chance to go back to back to back.
Well, yeah.
It's incredibly hard, right? Like, it's just like, you know, like, I understanding that, I'm kind of willing to concede them the East and just say that they're the gold standard. That's not a reach, but, you know, it's so hard to get through, you know, four rounds of playoffs three times in a row. Like, it's just incredibly tough.
Fatigue, too. A ton of hockey, right? 102 games since August, or sorry, 104 games since August 1st of 2020.
That's a crazy number.
And how many of those were, and 40-something of those were playoff games where it's so heightened, right? I mean, it's so, they're all one-goal games and it's all incredible battles. I'm wondering when, if ever, this fatigue will set in, which we've seen happen with other teams in the past. Sorry about that.
Who's the second best team in the East? Islanders?
You know, I picked the Islanders actually to win the East this year. I just think when you say the T word, team, they are a team, right? Like, their goaltending, from their first line to the fourth line, they roll their players through. They don't rely on one superstar or two superstars. They play hard. Their identity is through their coach, Barry Trotz. They play hard, and they grind you. And they've come within one goal the last 2 years, essentially, of getting to the Stanley Cup final. So they might be the best team in the East if Tampa has any slip. But then there's a number of teams, you know, listen, we're in this market in Toronto. A lot of people still, despite the last 54 years, right, they're still saying Toronto on paper is going to be a tough out. Florida on paper is going to be a tough out. There's still a number of teams that could, you know, Carolina is still a very sneakily good team.
Yeah.
So there's still a number there, but I would say the Islanders would be the team I say is right there with Tampa.
Yeah, the Leafs one, it's a tough one because, okay, they showed something during the regular season, albeit a very bizarre one last year, but a step that they needed to take in being consistent throughout the course of a regular season, because they were not that in the season before, where they lost in five games to the Columbus Blue Jackets. They were a bad regular season team, and they were, I think, on the outside of the playoff picture looking in. If the season had ended that day in a normal eight-team playoff fashion, they get into a play-in because the playoffs are expanded. But they have all the pieces, and they have Matthews, I guess, eventually. Marner, who knows, I guess, about his availability for tomorrow, because he suffered a bit of a bump in practice. You know what I'm curious about? Is Austin Matthews, in that season that was, it was shortened to only 70 in the season in which they lost in five games to the Columbus Blue Jackets in the bubble, he was on the verge of 50. and he didn't get to 50. And last year, he's almost hitting 50 during a very shortened regular season. Does that matter at all to you, the historic number of 50 that Austin Matthews could score it in an 82-game regular season?
You know, he was on pace for 65, right? Like, had he had an 82-game schedule. So I don't think 50 is out of the question at all. I mean, we haven't – this is a generational score, and I don't hate to – I don't want to use hyperbole and superlatives and all this. But, I mean, we're looking at a guy who – you know, since he's come into the NHL for five seasons, leads the NHL in even strength goals and game winning goals, et cetera, like in almost in all the metrics, he scores them different ways. He doesn't just sit there and wait on the power play. I mean, he scores them in all different ways. Great shot, can do so many things. You know, we're looking at a guy that, barring something unforeseen, this guy's going to be a sort of a 500 goal scorer and one of the elite all time goal scorers. So it's not out of the question at all. You know, I think that's one of the storylines we're certainly going to keep an eye on for the Leafs is who's going to win the Rocket Richard and is Austin Matthews going to be there?
Well, you need something, right? Because, you know, making the playoffs and even, I guess, you know, ending up with a President's Trophy isn't enough, right? Like, it's you got to do it with style, seemingly. And even that won't be enough. Of course, it'll all come down to the postseason.
Well, this is, but I think here's, and we can, by the way, we can talk Leafs disproportionately here because we don't have to, we don't have to have national balance here. We can talk all Leafs now if we want, but. What if they're the team, not the team last year, the team from the year before that you alluded to that was life and death to make the playoffs, right? They're going to, like, I want to see them play Tampa and play Boston and play the Islanders. And I think they got a pass last year.
I think these are both valid points. Elliot Friedman has gone as far as to say, we better not sleep on them, you know, winning playoff rounds. They got to get to the playoffs first. Right. And Anthony Stewart's gone as far as to say, it doesn't matter what happens in the regular season. Everything is going to be judged on what happens in the postseason. I think both those storylines are true. But first things first, they got to make the playoffs because they're in a, it's funny, they're in this two-sided division, right? Like Buffalo and Detroit are the dreads of the league. They're right there in the basement, essentially. But then they've got the top feeders in Tampa and Florida. You can't forget about Boston because every time I say, I think Boston's put a fork in them. You know, when you have Bergeron and Marchand and Pasternak, and if Rask does come back, that's a big question mark. You just can't put a fork in them either. So it's going to be, they're going to have to get off to a good start.
I was going to say,
I think the narrative might change if they're fifth place, sixth place.
I was just going to say, Dave, if we get to Christmas and they're treading water, all hell's going to break loose. There are going to be people in the stands, you know, expressing their displeasure, maybe not throwing waffles, but they will be there, right? And the story about, the front office story is going to become the story, right? Like it's classic Toronto stuff, but there's going to be a feeding frenzy if these guys are struggling in December and January.
The scrutiny will be immense. And the other storyline to keep an eye on, guys, Morgan Rielly. You know, what's happened to the Leafs in the last 4 or 5 years? They haven't necessarily locked down some of the guys, and they've watched them leave for nothing. And I don't think they can take that chance with Morgan Rielly. Clearly, their time to win is now. They're not going to sell for futures, but they have to figure out what the smartest path is with Morgan Rielly.
Well, I keep alluding to that bubble season that ends with the 5-game loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets. If you're at a similar point in this season and you're life and death to make the playoffs, maybe in the playoffs, I don't know, what do you do if you're Kyle Dubas and Morgan Riley's going to get you a King's ransom and maybe, like, you're starting...
Leave sellers at the deadline.
Oh, boy.
Ben Ennis. What's the date today?
You brought him up. I didn't want to do this. They haven't even played a game.
I love it.
It's the last time we saw them play these teams. They were not that good. I just don't know what to... Now, that being said, the blue line was very different, right, in that season. Yeah. And they're a much better, responsibly defensive team. At least they were, again, during that weird bubble season. The idea of them being a freewheeling team that allows a lot of chances both ways, not necessarily true. But yeah, the last time we saw them play Tampa a bunch of times and Boston a bunch of times, even with Austin Matthews on this historic goal-scoring spree, they were not at the top of the division or the top of the conference and with a huge gap between them and the playoffs. Like, do we think they're better than Tampa during a regular season, even losing that third line? Probably not. Like, they're not going to cruise into the playoffs, I don't think.
I think they might not take Tampa's approach, but remember when Tampa had that legendary year? I think it was 3 years ago. And they'd set the record for points, the most record, you know, fourth greatest point total in NHL history, 128 points. They meet Columbus in the first round and get swept by Columbus. And the next year, and you heard John Cooper sort of say, yeah, well, we're going to focus on the regular season, but we have a bigger goal in mind. The Leafs have to take that approach but they got to make sure they make the postseason.
Yes, that would be, because otherwise that would be a bad approach.
Yeah, quite frankly, yeah, that would be a bit of a problem. Like, oh, shoot, someone forgot to do the math. Uh-oh. Yeah. Listen, I think the idea, the notion of them being sellers is a non-starter simply because, and Haiti, we're really going down a crazy hole here, but Auston Matthews has 3 years left. There's no guarantees there. If you say to him, yeah, well, this isn't feeling like the year, we're going to start selling off parts, let me be there for that conversation. We'll need another all or nothing docudrama because that would be, that's not a conversation you can have, right? I think these guys are now in the mentality of we've had incredible stumbles in the postseason, but the nucleus is there. We feel strong about where we're heading, and this has to be, we have to show some traction. Do the Leafs have to win the cup this year? No, but do they have to have some traction? Do they have to win a playoff round for it to be considered a viably a good year?
I guess.
They have to.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I think the goal, even if they win one round this year, it feels like there might be the possibility of some ill feelings toward this team. I mean, winning a round last year would have really taken some of the pressure off. It's funny, though, that team that they're playing tomorrow, the Montreal Canadiens, without Carey Price for 30 days, nobody expected them, or at least 30 days, nobody expected them to go on that roll that they went on after shocking the Leafs in that seven-game series to start it. I mean, they kept being underdogs every single step of the way, and that series win against the Vegas Golden Knights was shocking, shocking, shocking stuff. I just don't, what is the carryover effect to that? I know they just locked up Nick Suzuki today. That's a really curious franchise for me, the Montreal Canadiens going into this year.
I think Steven said it best. He goes, what did we see? I'm still not sure what we saw because it was so unexpected. I mean, if you look at the path they took and how they matriculated their way through all the way to the Stanley Cup final, it was as unexpected a path. You know, we had analysts who, you know, get paid a pretty penny. I'm not saying anyone at our network, even at every network, saying, you know, they might not win a game against the Leafs.
Yeah.
And it came pretty close to being true, right? I mean, it took overtime in games, what, 5 and 6? Like, it almost did play out that way. And then they just got some momentum, and it seemed like, it almost felt like 93. They didn't win the cup on like 93, but it felt like everything just started to fall into place, right? I think there's some great parts there. But without Carey Price, and we're not sure how long, without Shea Weber.
Well, that's the one I keep coming at. Who's Shea Weber like for them? I know he was playing on, you know, with various limbs not functioning
just
by the
presence,
end.
But
he's
so
got a
much.
Huge presence. Just yeah, and there's and there, they don't there's not another one of them there, I don't think.
And Philip Deneau, even though he doesn't score goals, he provided sort of that shutdown, lockdown guy they needed who wins faceoffs, plays all different aspects of the game. So there's if there's one sort of enigma is probably the wrong word, but if there's one unknown, one massive question mark in that Atlantic division, it's the Montreal Canadiens, because they could get back to the playoffs, they could be a very scary team in the playoffs, or they could finish dead last in the National Hockey League, could happen. I mean, that could honestly happen, right? It wouldn't.
But if that does,
I don't
happen,
know which one would be more shocking. Right?
I know, and if that does happen, well, one, you might be talking about how different the playoffs are to the regular season, and that appears to be true, especially for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But two, you might be having these revisionist conversations about that North Division, and even I talked about the gains being made during the regular season for the Leafs last year. Like, is that still on the table of relitigating what happened?
Smoke and mirrors.
Right.
Listen, Montreal earned their spot. For us to go back and, you know, they beat Vegas with, you know, no one thinking they had a shot, and they went in there and they beat Vegas. Mm-hmm. And you heard Mark Stone talk this offseason where he said they couldn't handle the moment. You know what? Montreal handled the moment. The Corey Perrys, even the Suzukis, the Kotkaniemis, clearly Weber and Price, they were up to the moment, and they deserved that win. They deserved the win against Winnipeg, and they deserved the win against Toronto. So I don't want to take away from that. But you're right. There's big, legitimate question marks surrounding the Montreal Canadiens. We're going to start to get answers, you know, as early as tomorrow night. I'm just wondering if they get buried a little bit early in the season, if it just takes on a different life of its own, where they're not going to get sort of that. Where they got a break last year, Ben, in my opinion, was they were in that division where they finished 18th in the NHL and they still made the playoffs. In another division, they weren't going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah. Okay. So out West, the conventional wisdom, it would be that the Avs were close and they now are battle hardened and now's the time. I think there's reason to believe, I kind of thought they were going to win it last year, so there's certainly reason to believe that. But on the Canadian side of things, the Jets appear to be in decline or appear to be in decline by the again.
Well, I don't know, Steve. There's people who really are. Elliott's really hot on him.
He is.
On Winnipeg, Jeff Merrick is. They made some changes to their blue line, and you love their top six forwards.
Yeah, for sure.
And they have a Vezina-winning goaltender. So they have the requisite sort of checklist of what you're looking for in the nucleus of a team. And they also have an identity, I think, with Paul Maurice. They have stability with Paul Maurice and an identity with Paul Maurice of how they play. So I think there's a lot of good things about the Winnipeg
team. So you think the arrow's still pointing up there?
I do. And the team I really like, and I'm probably going to eat these words, you know, burn this tape after we're done, but Vancouver, Pettersson's back and healthy. I like the changes. You know, they've made some subtle changes there and added some depth in the goaltending situation alongside Demko. I like that Vancouver team. I think I'm just fascinated by their young parts, the way that people are fascinated by the Leafs' young parts.
Yeah, and their whole season last year went off the rails had nothing to do with anything. So we'll never know what they were last year, right?
Because of the COVID. 26-day, you know, and then it was like, okay, well, you got 5 games every 7 days for the next 3 weeks. Good luck. I mean, they were done.
Yeah.
So it was, they played under the most difficult circumstances last year. And, you know, in talking to some of the players, talking to Travis Green, they're not going to make excuses, but it hampered everything. Quinn Hughes had a bit of a decline in his sophomore year. He'll make the appropriate adjustments. They got OEL from Arizona. They got Connor Garland, a guy who can add some complimentary scoring. I like that Vancouver team. Again, I could be eating all of this in 2 months, but right now I'm pretty hot for them.
How about the Oil?
You know, flip that coin, right? I still, you know, kudos to Mike Smith. He's 39 years old. I can barely, you know, I'm 50 and I have trouble getting out of bed sometimes. And this guy is like an all-star goalie at 39. It's incredible. But can you catch that, you know, lightning in a bottle twice, essentially, right? Like it was his best season by far. And again, he only had to face 6 different opponents. It might be, you know, we'll have to wait and see. Because to me, it's about the goaltending. Can they have elite goaltending with Koskinen and with Mike Smith? If they get elite goaltending and you've got, you know, 2 of the best players in the world, you're in okay shape. And listen, they added Zach Hyman. They made some good moves. I like, you know, it was a good offseason for the Oilers. But I always, it's kind of like the Leafs, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me 54 times, shame on me, right?
They have a series win, albeit just one, under Connor McDavid, and could have easily had a second over the Ducks. I think they were up big in that series.
Some officiating played a role in that series.
Yeah, but it's weird. Like, they, and the team surrounding those two big dogs in Edmonton is inferior to what the Leafs have, but the clock is very much ticking on Connor McDavid. Like, the pressure to do something with the best player in the National Hockey League, and when it's all said and done, maybe the best of all time, to have only won one series. And again, none since 2017. We're out of the playoffs twice since then. Like, the pressure is, has got to be ramping up year after year.
The narratives between Toronto and Edmonton are not that dissimilar, quite frankly. I mean, there's differences and there's nuances that are different and everything else. But yeah, there's pressure there to win in Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. We should lump him in there. He's a very elite player. This is their prime, right? It's not like they're in the decline, but these next 3, 4, 5 years are the best you're going to see of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, you know, based on history of other players, right? So you can't let these years pass by. So, yeah, there's pressure there for sure, Ben.
It all gets started tonight in Tampa, the Pittsburgh Penguins, Tampa Bay Lightning, 7:30 on Sportsnet. You can see the new studio that we haven't been allowed to see.
Is Berkey going to get on camera at all? You know, like, will they find him somewhere in the in a box there somewhere reacting? I would assume so.
I'm nervous without Crosby and Malkin for him. I'm going to send him a little, hey, good luck this season. He'll tell me to hug off probably.
I expect we'll see him on the broadcast at some point. Yeah.
And that's the other thing, where it's ESPN and TNT, new American broadcast. I think there's a lot of intrigue, if nothing else. Fans are back in the building. It's going to look and feel different from the American broadcast standpoint. We have a new look, and we have people in studio together. So a lot of excitement. It should be a lot of fun. It all gets going 7:30 tonight on Sportsnet.
Can't wait. Thanks for doing this, David. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you guys.
Yeah, come see us. We're you know,
we're very close.
Post snack. We have snacks in the building.
Right? Oh, I need a snack. A post show drink sometime too, fellas.
Yes.
Sounds very good. David Amber. All right, when we come back, Adnan Virk as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Rather large soccer game tomorrow. Canada's soccer men's national team will continue its qualifying journey to the FIFA World Cup Qatar 2022 with critical matches on home soil at BMO Field this October. We want to send you. We will take caller number 7 right now. 1-888-666-0590 *590 on your cell. You could be going to BMO tomorrow, which is, I had to double check because October 13th seems like it shouldn't be 25 degrees outside, but it is October 13th to see Canada battle Panama. This is your chance to win a four-pack of tickets to see Canada, led by breakout international stars Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David, facing Panama on October 13th. As the quest for Qatar continues, you can also buy tickets right now at canadasoccer.com. Stay tuned tomorrow for your next chance to win right here on the Fan Drive Time. Let's talk to our friend Adnan Virk of MLB Network, NHL Network, the GM Shuffle podcast. How's it going, Adnan?
I'm doing great, Ben. Steven, great to be with you guys. I love this time of year. It's the best sports month possible. And of course, diving into all the postseason baseball. It's a great time to be alive. It really is.
Yes, it is. I'm partial to April, but then, yeah, you know what? October will do just fine. So we're just watching the Astros put the finishing touches on a beatdown of the Chicago White Sox in game four of this series, advancing to the American League Championship Series. I guess statements sent about the alleged sign stealing happening still in 2021.
Yeah, Ryan Tepera, eat these words, huh? Like, I mean, I was kind of surprised by his comment. For those who missed it, he said, they've obviously had a reputation of doing some sketchy stuff over there. I think you saw the swings and misses Sunday compared to the first two games at Minute Maid Park. Well, guess what, Tepera? Your team didn't show up, and the Astros did. And as Dusty Baker said, those are some meaningful comments he's throwing out there, some weighty conclusions. But ultimately, White Sox have been completely outclassed, and we shouldn't have been surprised by this. This was a team, Ben. They were sub-500 on the road. They were 39-34 in the second half. That's a one game better than division rivals Kansas City and Detroit. They clearly had shoddy starting pitching in this series. This is their first division title in 13 years. Like, congrats to the South Side. But think about this. Lance Lynn, Lucas Giolito, and Dylan Cease. Those are three starters combined to allow 12 runs in 9 2/3 combined innings. That's an ERA over 11. You're not going to win games like that. And then Carlos Rodon goes out there today. He allowed one hit, five scoreless back in September 29th. Had not pitched in 13 days. But this Houston offense is absolutely lit. A lot of fun. Houston and Houston, 7-2. Both of those offenses, with apologies to the Blues, as good as it gets in 2021 this season. And Alex Cora, of course, won a World Series as a bench coach with Houston, won a World Series as a Red Sox manager, former player. This, Ben, you go, hey, listen, I like every series to go five, but as much baseball as possible. But if you're going to be a fraud, then just announce it. And the White Sox announced it tonight. They lost 10-1 in an elimination game. Bring on the Astros and Red Sox.
Yeah, well, they played it in a joke division too. So, right? Like, they played 19 games against bad opposition in their division. I'm all for this, and I'm all for Tony La Russa losing. So I'm all for this. Now, of course, it does set up, you know, that, like, it's not the Alex Cora connection is not the only way we connect those two franchises. So, you know, some people may have a hard time coming up with a rooting interest. Not me. I will cheer for Houston. But tell me that they're going to roll over. Like, Ben and I were just talking off air about this, Adnan, that, you know, you look at that Red Sox team and you say, well, you know, they don't really deserve to be here. This is the team that lost, you know, two to the Orioles the last week of the season. They were down 5-1 to the Nationals in the last game. They barely scraped in. You know, the Chris Sale's not Chris Sale, et cetera, et cetera, surely. And then you think, you know, those teams that actually won World Series, those Red Sox teams, were sort of like this, you know? And then they turned on at the right time. And this is my worst nightmare. But, you know, like, I assume the Astros are going to roll them in the ALCS, but I'm probably dead wrong.
Yeah, Steven, I remember the Yankees in 2000, that Subway Series team. They were poor in September, if I'm not mistaken. Sub-500. And I never... Because I'm like,
hey, Adnan, we're going to grab you on a better line here for whatever reasons. I mean, we're trying to be...
Save that thought.
Yeah. And we're trying to be smart and make it sound really good by having you not on a phone line. And, of course, that blew up in our faces. Yeah, here's the deal. 2004, the Red Sox are very good.
Yes.
They, like, not Hall of Famers because, well, one of them will be. I think David Ortiz will get into the Hall of Fame, whether he did or did not do steroids.
Okay. So we'll acknowledge that. Well, yes. Well, yes, I'm sure he didn't. Because, he's such a nice guy. Poppy. How could he even do it? He's nice.
No, I mean, he was always that. He wasn't a slap hitter in Minnesota and then did turn himself into one of the great...
I can't believe you'd say that about him.
And they had Manny Ramirez, who is Hall of Fame worthy, but won't get in because he actually popped for steroids. That was a legendary... That was a great team in 2004. 2013, pretty good team, I guess. 2018, come on, give me a break.
Yeah, no way.
Like, give me a break. In 2021, absolutely give me a massive break. But here we are, and the Red Sox are through to the American League Championship Series. And we have Adnan back, who was in the middle of some incredible diatribe. Continue exactly where you left off.
Some of my best work. As I was saying, Stephen, the 2000 Yankees, if I'm not mistaken, had a sub-500 record in September. And I always remember this because, of course, then the Subway Series happened, the Yankees won. So the next time someone says to me, well, hey, if a team's struggling going to the playoffs, they're in trouble. I'm like, no, that's not true. It just depends on what happens when the new season starts, which is the postseason. Rocktober, as great as the Rockies were, guess what? They didn't win the World Series that year. They lost to Boston. And to your point, the last team before these Red Sox to reach the LCS after finishing in last place in their division the season before. Now, I get it. 60-game season a year ago, but it was also the Red Sox. Yep. That was their 2013 championship season. So they made a habit of looking like they're vulnerable and then constantly showing up and punching the other team in the face. I mean, they're one of the great closers ever. They've won 8 straight games in potential series clinchers. That's the second longest streak in baseball history. When they've got a team on the ropes, they finish them off. Only the A's in the 70s and 80s had a longer streak of 9. And a lot of it's my old friend Alex Cora. We worked together for years. Baseball Tonight, ESPN. He's a brilliant manager.
Yes.
I mean, this record, eight postseason series as a coach or manager, he's won them all. Like, you can literally watch him and go, okay, who's pitching in this bullpen? Barnes was an all-star closer. Now he's not even, like, he's irrelevant. He just constantly pulls the strings. Okay, a little bit of Pivetta here, a little bit of Brazier here. I can get to my outs. What was fascinating is I heard Alex the other day talk about Eduardo Rodriguez. There's an interview by Ken Rosenthal. He said, what's the plan tonight? He said, 15 outs. And I said, exactly. Oh, he's literally counting every single out, 27 outs. 15 here, 3 here, 2 here, and then we'll make it work. And then he's got Rafael Devers, who is one of the great underrated young players in the game. 20 RBI in 20 career postseason games. He bats .389 with runners on base. Talk about a guy perfectly suited to play at Fenway Park and just bashing doubles off the green monster. This Boston offense has been huge, and that series was certainly compelling because it had the drama of a Vasquez walk-off. I mean, that Kiermaier throw was unbelievable. The fact the Rays came back from down 5-0. I was pulling for Tampa. I said, let's see this thing go 5. But Boston's successful. I just feel for Tampa, the way that series ended, I mean, God, the Wander Franco era, and then obviously that era for the third baseman, Choi couldn't cover it up. So for Boston, listen, they're a great story. They were miserable a season ago, and here they are in the ALCS.
I still would have walked Kike and pitched the Devers with the bases loaded. I still would have done that in a game last night. That's not why they lost necessarily, but I still would have done that. What lesson, is there anything, you know, the fact that the 100-win Rays, the super geniuses of baseball, lost that series, is there anything to be taken from that about, you know, the way they do business? I know, you know, again, I know they were in the series last year. I thought they'd be in the series this year. But is there anything, any kind of takeaway from that and the way that team's constructed and the way they play that, you know, maybe this isn't, they're not suited for a short series in October?
Part of it could be this, Stephen, that they don't place enough of a premium on starting pitching. When you look at their starters and you said to yourself, all right, McClanahan, Boz, Rasmussen, that's not exactly Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin, to name a World Series roster of 2019 and their starting pitchers. And that was the one concern I had for Tampa. When Glasnow went down, I said, you know, they don't have that horse. And I kept telling myself, I'm thinking of baseball from 1991 and Jack Morris and John Smoltz. Get over it. As long as you have a great offense and a brilliant bullpen, which they do have, they're going to be fine. But I think the lack of quality starters did hurt them in terms of being overly reliant on the bullpen. And I think part of their offense, too, it's very boom or bust. You know, this was the best offense Tampa's ever had. They hit a lot of home runs. But, of course, in the playoffs, we know it's harder because you're facing better pitching. So it's okay to hit home runs against mediocre teams. But in the playoffs, that gets a lot tougher to do. So all those sexy stats about their exit velocity and their barrel percentage kind of went out the window. And I just think Boston outplayed them, pure and simple.
Yeah, it's hard to say that the whole Rays thing only works in the regular season because they did make a World Series last year.
They did.
They had a legitimate chance to beat a very good Dodgers team, and a Dodgers team with the highest payroll in baseball. But there's elements of it, Adnan, I think you're right, that just – when it comes to playoff time, the idea that you have World Series aspirations and you're looking to 3 rookies in 3 consecutive games to start a series is bizarre. And I know Wander Franco is going to be great for as long as the Rays have him before they trade him away. And Randy Arozarena has been this incredible playoff performer ever since he stepped foot in the Major Leagues of Baseball a season ago. But I guess there's just something that every year I'll go into the postseason, and if they win 95 games next year, I just will not believe that that's the way you're supposed to build a World Series champion.
And Ben, part of it may just be bad luck. They had 14 injured pitchers. Like I mentioned, Glasnow, you throw in Yonny Chirinos and Ryan Thompson, Nick Anderson. Like, they were down like to Matt Whistler, Michael Wacha, David Robertson. I mean, their young trio, I mentioned McClanahan, Boz, Rasmussen, all those guys underwhelmed. Like, the good news for Tampa is this. There's nowhere to go but up. You mentioned Wander Franco. He and Randy Arozarena are stars. Brandon Lau, not great in the postseason, one of the best second basemen in the game. Austin Meadows has 60 home runs and 195 RBI over his last two full seasons. And oh, guess what? Four other top five prospects are position players in the upper minors. So they're going to be good because they've got that young core. The only major free agent coming off the books is Nelson Cruz. Glasnow is not free agent eligible until after the 2023 season. So part of this may just be bad luck because they did get hit hard with those injuries to their pitching.
Yeah. They'll probably still move some guys in the offseason and bring in four of those prospects by the time next season's over. And because, you know, they got some guys who are ARB eligible, right? That's what they do, right? No, I tip my cap to the organization. I guess I'm still a little shocky about how they lost. And you're right. Like, Lau was terrible in this series, right? He just, again, he looked awful.
He's been horrific in the postseason the last couple of years, but his entire career, which is now, like, it's a sample size sport. I don't know if 29 games is enough of a sample to make a judgment on a guy. And I know, you know, we don't like to admit that clutch might exist or that it's a different ball game. Like, you're still three strikes and four balls, I believe. And the strike zone's the same in the postseason. But when you see Randy Arozarena do what he does in the postseason, and you look at Brandon Lau and what he has failed to do over 29 games, having an OPS under 500 in the playoffs, Adnan, like, there has to be something to, you know, maybe just some guys it doesn't work for. And not to say that he can't break out, because we've also seen that, you know, guys have poor track record of success in the postseason, then have a very good postseason next. But at this point, it's hard to say anything other than Brandon Lau just has not made it work in October.
Yeah, A-Rod famously, right? Horrible playoff struggles, then had that one playoff series. Yankees obviously won the World Series 09, where he was incredible. So it can turn around. But I think for Tampa, ultimately they're going to say to themselves, we just need to pull off some more trades. Like, Eric Neander, the Rays vice president, he just loves fleecing other teams. Mm-hmm. Like, every time they showed that graphic of the Chris Archer trade, I mean, you just laugh to yourself. You go, how did they do this? They got Shane Boz, Austin Meadows, and Glasnow.
Yeah.
Like, he just needs to pull off one of those trades this offseason, and Tampa can reset on the fly, no problem.
Yeah, if it's anything like that one, yeah, they'll be set for the next decade. I mean, that one is setting them up for the next decade.
Don't answer your phone.
You can't. Absolutely not. Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins, they're smart enough not to answer their phones. So this Dodgers-Giants series is living up to expectations, I would say, Adnan. It was a great game yesterday, bizarre game, man. The wind was insane, maybe unlike any game I've ever seen. I don't know if I've ever seen foul poles move as violently as they were yesterday at Dodger Stadium. But it's just, man, basically parts of this Giants season has been inexplicable. 107 wins for some of the guys that are having resurgent seasons late in their careers. It feels like at a certain point, they're the team of destiny. I think yesterday was the point for me. It probably should have been the 107 regular season wins, but yesterday felt like a turning point.
Yeah, the biggest thing I noticed, Ben, with the Giants, I did an essay on them for MLB Network a few weeks ago, and I said, you know, if you look at OPS, you know, their numbers, particularly OPS Plus, which, you know, real simple, 100 and above, 100 is average, right? They had eight guys, 115 and above. Only the Rays could match them. So, like, they have a lot of players in their lineup that are just above average. They don't have the star power of Los Angeles or Houston, perhaps, but every guy's above average. And then they're starting pitching. You can just overlook them at your own peril. But all those guys have stepped up, whether it's Gausman, DeSclafani, Webb, Wood. Like, all those guys have been really good. And now they're one win away from their first NLCS appearance since 2014. And ultimately, it comes down to pitching. I mean, the Dodgers were shut out five times during the regular season. That's it. That's the second fewest in baseball. They've been held scoreless twice in the NLDS. 31 of 36 innings, they haven't scored a run. I know Max Muncy is a great player, but are you kidding me? Max Muncy's gone. The entire offense evaporates. Like, that's amazing that San Francisco is able to do that with their pitching, silencing Los Angeles. And then their offense, again, is boom or bust. They led the majors. Almost 50%, 49.5% of the runs are scored via the home run. five of their seven runs, the NLDS, have been via the home run. So they've shut down L.A., and they're hitting home runs. And that game, you're right, Ben, the wind, the way it was whipping, the Dodgers should have tied that game in the ninth, but both teams had to deal with those conditions. I love Scherzer, old classic bulldog performance, seven innings, 111 pitches, but his team couldn't score.
Last one, very much off the beaten path. Rod Manfred was speaking today at some conference. He mentioned doing more of those Field of Dreams type of games, but in places that are not in a cornfield in Iowa, in places that are not traditional baseball settings. Do you have a thought on where you would like to see a baseball game played? Because I have a couple, but yeah, have you thought of this? Do you have a place on planet Earth that you would like to see a baseball game played in the not too distant future?
Well, you know me, Ben, everything's about the movie. So I want to find out where they shot The Natural. Let's go ahead and trot out Robert Redford. Yeah. While he's still alive, he can go throw out the first pitch like Kevin Costner, and he can walk out of cornfields. What the hell? We'll put that in there. We'll conflate Field of Dreams and The Natural, and he can go, okay, you know, break a light tower with a home run with Wonder Boy. I'd love to see wherever the Bad News Bears took place. Like, I think if you tied in more movies with those settings, it'd be pretty cool. How about you?
Yeah, I'm more of like a natural settings guy. I want to see somebody hit a home run into the Grand Canyon. It would have to be environmentally friendly. Like, we'll go down and get the ball with a helicopter or whatever. But yeah, I want to see someone hit into a land feature, or maybe into Niagara Falls. Like, I want it built around the planet. I don't know. Yeah, but we have different things that we want. Why don't we do both?
Well, listen, we saw with the NHL, I mean, Lake Tahoe, what a spectacular city that was. And, of course, I think of Godfather, too. So, in honor, we'll have the Fredo Bowl. In honor of Fredo Bowl, a baseball game taking place
in
Lake
a boat. Yeah. All right. Adnan, great stuff as always, bud. Talk again soon.
Thanks.
Ben, Steven, thanks, boys. Take care.
See ya. Adnan Virk of MLB Network, NHL Network, and the GM Shuffle podcast. Yeah, the problem with that and the problem with the Lake Tahoe thing is it works in a pandemic season where you can have fans.
Correct. And it's just a TV show and it's a novelty act. And isn't it cool? Like, the whole point of that, like the outdoor hockey, if there's still a point to outdoor hockey games, I would argue there's not.
Yeah.
is about the people freezing their butts off in the stadium, wherever it happens to be. Right. Isn't that kind of,
I think so.
I kind of think so. By the way, we can update. So 10-1 Astros final.
Yeah.
That's done
with authority.
And the Milwaukeeans are up 1-0. In the fourth inning, I believe, over the Atlanta baseball team.
All right. Yeah, that's kind of the forgotten series.
Isn't it? It's because it's been kind of dull, I think, actually, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been a little bit dull. But, yeah, also, I mean,
well pitched, so maybe that's what made it dull. But
yeah, I mean, you have two of the, what's the opposite of glamour, franchises in Major League Baseball.
Like, yeah.
The Braves, you know, won 1,000 straight division titles and won one World Series, and nobody really paid much attention to them. The Brewers play in Milwaukee, and yeah, the people in Milwaukee are more interested in the Packers than I think they are the Brewers. So I think that plays into it.
They're more interested in the Packers than they are in anything. Although they do have a pretty good basketball team.
That's not that's a fair point.
They used to, when Bud Selig owned the Brewers, he used to come into the press box. You know, I remember being there in like October when it was cold and the Jays were kind of in it and the Brewers weren't, and he would come in and bug the local columnist from the newspaper, sit beside him and bug him and just about the Packers. So he's lots of fun in those days, but before he became commissioner.
Yeah.
And he would just sit there and talk about how terrible the Packers were and try and rile the guy up.
Really?
It was awesome. It was great because it was a dump of an old stadium, and it, you know, generally there wasn't anybody there. But yeah, Bud liked to do that. That was his parlor game was to.
Yeah. Did you know in that moment that guy would be a Hall of Famer?
No, I didn't. I didn't. No, no,
he's
I didn't.
A hall,
I didn't
he's in
suspect
the Hall of
he,
Fame.
I didn't have him on my short list as commissioner. No, I didn't.
Not just a commissioner, but a Hall of Fame
Hall
commissioner.
Of fame is,
you know, he baseball rose in popularity, well, at least in financial growth. You know, people were hitting home runs at record paces.
Yes.
When he was in charge.
He's a nice kid. Buy a car off him. And if you lived in Milwaukee, you'd buy a car from Bud Selig. He's a nice guy. He's a very nice guy. Just, yeah, the rest of it I didn't imagine.
Before we go, the Kyrie Irving story progresses, and I was a bit surprised, honestly, by the latest development, especially since the practice facility in Brooklyn was deemed a private facility. So Kyrie Irving was permitted to practice at home, if not play in the games, because he was not permitted by law to enter the arena in Brooklyn. It was announced yesterday and reported on, and general manager Sean Marks talked about it. He will not be a part-time player. The Nets have said, we know we could have you for, I guess it wouldn't even be the 41 home games because I don't think he'd be eligible to play in New York against the Knicks, but somewhere close to 41 road games. If you can't play in all of them, you can't play in any of them, which was slightly surprising to me. And it made me think about what Kevin Durant must be thinking, because as much as Sean Marks wants to talk about this being a decision that he came to on his own, along with the owner, Joe Tsai, this is an organization that runs through Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant wanted to hook up with Kyrie Irving. Kevin Durant wanted James Harden, and he got all those things. And if Kevin Durant wanted Kyrie Irving to play in 30 games or whatever, as an unvaccinated player, unable to play home games, that's what he was going to do.
You are correct.
So the worm has turned, I think, on their relationship.
Yeah, I think... I was going to say, like, you think about teams like that. This is the least organic team in history, right? It's a, you know, it's a team cobbled together with, dropped out of the sky with, guys who are huge talents and huge egos, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's not about kind of team chemistry because I'm not sure there is any, but I would think, yeah, that Kevin Durant thinks he's got a better chance to win a championship without Kyrie Irving, the distraction of Kyrie Irving, than with Kyrie Irving in the lineup half the time. That's an interesting decision.
Yeah, and I think it's honestly the right one. As incredible as Kyrie Irving is, he has been a part of some pretty incredible organizations that seem to be on the ascension, and then he arrived, and despite putting up some numbers, messed with the chemistry to such a degree that they had trouble recovering, honestly, in Boston.
Yes,
that Celtics
did.
Team, with the way he departed. And as much as pro sports and specifically the NBA caters to its superstars, and there's separate set of rules, and look at what the Raptors did in the Kawhi Leonard years and what they allowed him to do and what they still allow him to do in LA with the Clippers, whether that's, helicoptering in on game days or practice days. It's different than, hey, I'm not showing up for some of these games, and that there is a line of demarcation between being catered to and upsetting the internal chemistry and the balance of a team. This is a team that could win a title.
Yes.
And they must still believe that they can do that without Kyrie Irving.
I think Kevin Durant's still the best player in the world, so when he's healthy. So I think a penny for Steve Nash's thoughts.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you love to hear what Steve Nash has to say right now?
Honestly, like all these guys signing up for what they thought they were signing up for, and last year goes off the rails, despite the fact that they were like a Kevin Durant toenail away from knocking off the eventual champions in the Eastern Conference Final with like a 1/10 version of James Harden and no Kyrie Irving. You go into this season as title favorites, despite the fact that the Bucks brought everybody back and they do have the MVP in Giannis Antetokounmpo. And all you need to do is just get everybody to play along. And granted, there's like this extra element of the pandemic that nobody could have predicted. But you know what you could have predicted? Unpredictable behavior by Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, and I kind of hope that somebody just said, that's too much BS, right? This is just, that's too much. Because a lot of people in the world are saying that about a lot of stuff right now. No. Yeah. No more. I don't actually have to honor that point of view.
No.
Let's get on with it.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens from here. But this is a guy that, before the vaccination story was rumored to be considering retirement, maybe this is a bridge too far for him and we actually see him walk away from the game. But anyways, an intriguing, intriguing story. NHL hockey returns to your television sets tonight on Sportsnet 7:30. It's the Penguins in Tampa against the Lightning. Leafs open up their season tomorrow, and that's when we'll be back. It's been the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.